All right, I'd like to call to order the Alameda County Board of Supervisors Personnel Administration Legislative Committee meeting for Monday, the 20th of March. And the first item that we have on today's agenda will be the legislative update from the federal lobbyist.
Good afternoon. You've got Emily and Kevin here with CJ Lake. The House Republicans are actually in Orlando this week for their annual legislative retreat. So the House won't come into session until this Wednesday, and then the Senate will return for votes tomorrow. Again, things have been kind of slow to get started. I think this week things are finally picking up because President Biden unveiled his FY24 budget proposal at the beginning of last week. And so that officially kicks off the appropriations process. As usual, the budget is dead on arrival, but it does provide some insight to the administration's priorities for the upcoming year. It will also serve as a starting position for the administration in negotiations with congressional Republicans on spending. And I think most importantly, the debt ceiling. You know, we've been talking about that. Congress will likely need to vote to increase the debt ceiling at some point this summer, before kind of appropriations bills really get off the floor in the House and Senate. So I think the debt ceiling vote will occur prior to appropriations really getting underway. His proposal includes increasing funding for several government programs, protecting Medicare by extending the solvency of the Medicare Trust Fund by at least 25 years, lowering prescription drug costs and reducing the deficit by $3 trillion over the next 10 years. It includes $842 billion for the Pentagon. That's an increase of 3.2% over the FY23 enacted level, and a total defense budget of $886 billion. Of course, Republicans have already said that isn't enough. And, you know, as usual, the fight on the discretionary side of things is kind of parity for both defense and non-defense. And so that will be part of a larger conversation. The plan also includes a request for $688 billion in discretionary funding for non-defense programs, and that's up 7.3% from FY23. So again, there's already this discrepancy in the percentage increase from defense and non-defense from last year. It also calls for several tax increases to reduce the deficit by $3 trillion over the next decade, including doubling the capital gains tax rate for those that make $1 million or more, creating a 39.6% top income bracket for people earning over $400,000 a year, and creating a billionaire's tax that includes 25% minimum tax rate on the wealthiest 0.01% of taxpayers. It would also increase the corporate tax rate from 21% to 28%. It also proposes an increase to the child tax credit to $3,600 for children under six and $3,000 for older children. So again, you know, Republicans will not agree to any of these proposals, but it shows you where the administration wants to go. Cabinet secretaries will be testifying starting this week before the House and Senate panels. This includes Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, HHS Secretary Javier Becerra, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm, the EPA Administrator Michael Regan, and then OMB Director Shalonda Young. We will be monitoring those hearings. You know, I think what will be key is to see the types of questions that Republicans in particular, House Republicans, are asking to get a sense of where they may want to go on their budget resolution and the appropriations bills. And so we will be sending out details on those hearings. As I mentioned, Kevin is here and he's going to talk a little bit about the Senate, which I know we touched on last time, but there really is an issue in terms of attendance and what's happening or not happening in the Senate due to that.
Yes, thanks, Emily, and good afternoon, everyone. Just wanted to follow up to our last call when we talked a bit about some of the issues with Senate attendance. Interestingly enough, the last time all 100 senators were on the floor voting together was over 7 months ago when the Senate passed the Inflation Reduction Act. You know, so both parties have started noticing that attendance is having a large impact on votes. It's having an impact on committee hearings. And of course, there's some procedural hurdles that they need to overcome. And this is certainly being impacted. Just last week, five senators missed every vote, with several out for extended absences. It is nearly certain that fewer than 100 senators will be back in Washington this week. We did note that Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is recovering from a concussion. He's on a slip that he had a couple weeks ago. Of course, California's Senator Dianne Feinstein is battling shingles, and Senator John Fetterman from Pennsylvania is receiving inpatient treatment for depression. Of course, given the 51-49 split in the Senate, any single absence can have consequences when it comes to either party's priorities. Just last week, we saw with the absence of Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, there was a forced delay on a vote to roll back President Biden's administration's environmental regulations, and Senator Feinstein's absence has postponed votes to move nominees to the Judiciary Committee. It's still not clear when the Senate will have full attendance, but we do fully expect this will continue to be an issue in the chamber over the next year. That is it for our formal report. Would be happy to open it up to any questions on this topic or any other topics you may have.
Supervisor Tam, do you have any questions? I recall the first discussion we had about attendance kind of based on Senator Feinstein's condition at that point. What I don't know is kind of how has attendance been for the last year or two with the United States Senate in terms of being able to, committee-wise as well as full Senate being able to convene. Is this out of the ordinary because of the number being so close between Republican and senators? Is there any feeling or indication that some of these absences are intentional or strategic, or is just kind of the regular business has historically been the issue with the Senate, especially for the last couple of administrations?
Yeah, I think one of the issues, I was going to jump in. I don't think it's purposeful at all. I think a lot of these are just sicknesses that were not, that have just happened. And in particular, I think since we last spoke, Senator McConnell fell. And so he's out and has been out, I think, for the last 2 weeks. I think one of the issues that people have talked about is just in general, it's an older population in the Senate. And so a number of these senators have just been facing various sicknesses. And I think even Senator Durbin may be out this week because I think he has tested positive for COVID. And so he's having to quarantine. Of course, that was part of the issue, you know, I'd say for the last year is just various senators having to quarantine. But this seems to go beyond that with just kind of various things that have happened. And so they were saying, again, as Kevin mentioned, you know, Democrats aren't able to move certain things because of their majority is so fragile. But at the same time, Republicans weren't able to do something because the minority leader was missing. So I don't think it's ever been this consistent with kind of five being gone for weeks at a time.
Okay, thank you. Anyone online have a question or comment?
No speakers.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll move over to the legislative update from the State Political Solutions.
Yes, good afternoon. Monica Miller from the Political Solutions team. Thank you, as always, for having me. So briefly, where we've been for the last couple of weeks, traditionally, recall that Governor Newsom has presented his State of the State. This year, he decided to deviate from that, and instead, he did a tour of California to unveil various proposals that he's putting forward within the legislature and to the governor, and to the voters, excuse me. This tour started last week. We have highlighted that in our PAL update, but just briefly to run through some of the issues. One of the highlights, of course, is reducing homelessness and coming up with ways to work with local governments, both cities and counties, to try and alleviate that problem. As you know, this has been an ongoing discussion for many years now, quite frankly. And so he's hopeful that the plan, the proposal that he's put together with legislative leadership and with members of the legislature and local governments can come to pass and to help alleviate the crisis that we're facing, the humanitarian crisis that we're facing. The other issue has to do with public safety. He visited San Quentin and wants to change that facility to a rehabilitative and a restorative justice facility. So he is trying to get everything lined up with that, working with his agencies and the legislature to try and figure out how that's going to look and how they're going to move that prisoner population that's currently there. And overall, you know, it's a pretty big change. And so we'll see how that begins to unfold. That's on the public safety side. He also has talked about the healthcare crisis that we're having and costs associated with that. And he did a tour on Saturday where he talked about reducing costs. He has signed a contract with the entity that he created, CalRx, to reduce the cost of insulin to $30 per dose per patient. So that's good news. As you know, those pens have gone up pretty significantly over the last couple of years. So we'll see more change to come with that. And then finally, mental health care reform. That's something that has been on, you know, top of his agenda as well as other locals. And it loops right back to the homelessness humanitarian crisis that we're having. They really do go hand in hand. So he's hopeful and optimistic that some of the proposals that he's putting forward and working with the legislature, we can achieve some significant strides there because it's something that's so desperately needed. So, you know, briefly, since we're in March, almost towards the end of March, we're in the middle of both budget and policy. Policy committees have gotten going pretty strong, and bills are starting to be not only referred to policy committees, but also set to be heard, such as the two sponsored bills that the County of Alameda has, AB 922 by Assemblymember Buffy Wicks related to the meals delivery program. That has been referred. It hasn't been set as of yet. We continue to work with our author's office and your staff to make sure that they have all of the information that they need, as well as get prepared for the upcoming policy committee. Additionally, we have our AB 1313, which is sponsored by the county related to social services and trying to restore from the state level programs such as linkages, case management, et cetera, to our seniors that are just above the Medi-Cal line, but not quite in the middle class. And so that's something that there's an urgent need for, working with Marin and Sonoma counties on that particular piece of legislation. And then finally, as we look ahead, you know, we are looking at the state budget. The governor did push out when taxes are due, personal income taxes, as well as quarterly taxes for businesses from April 15th to October 15th. So just trying to ascertain what that's going to look like for the May revise, how that's going to unfold. And continuing to keep an eye on our budget deficit, moving, you know, through the spring and into the summer as we try to negotiate a budget that's completed. That is our report for today, and I'm happy to answer any questions, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Supervisor Tam.
Thank you, Chair Carson. I have a few questions. You mentioned about the governor's tour and the state of the state address, and I had read that the focus in the Bay Area was going to be on his mental health care package. Do you have more details about that?
Yeah, we can get that to you. That actually, that was the final stop that he did yesterday. Okay. So we can get you the notes from that directly to your office. So those went out last night to your staff, but we'll make sure you get that.
Okay, and then the second question I had was on housing. I had understood that the Attorney General's office and the governor had basically sued Huntington Beach, Orange County, for being fairly delinquent in their housing element. What is the remedy that they're seeking? Because I think this has been going on for a while in that jurisdiction.
I mean, I think ultimately, you know, supervisor, the remedy is to get, you know, the city of Huntington Beach to come into compliance. As you, I'm sure, have read or are aware, they have blatantly said it doesn't fit with our model of how we want to do our city planning. And therefore, we just will not come in compliance with our RENA, which is the Regional Housing Regional Housing Needs Assessment. And as you know, Department of HCD, Housing and Community Development, issues a set amount of numbers based on population that each jurisdiction must comply with, both city and county. And they do not overlap. And as such, the city of Huntington Beach has just flat out said, we're not going to build. So as a result, you know, the one remedy I know that they have is they can shut down their planning department. So therefore the city would not be able to issue any additional planning permits to any developers or homeowners that seek to make changes to their personal residence, their private residence. So in terms of other remedies, I'm not sure other than just trying to get the city to come into compliance. And so that'll be interesting. I suspect it goes, you know, possibly all the way to the Supreme Court, because the city of Huntington Beach has actually been, for the last couple of years, have been not interested in complying. So we'll see how that ultimately turns out. So.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Yes.
We're also missing our deadline, by the way.
You know, you're not alone in that, just so you know. Everyone is, because I believe it was the end of January, and I don't think any or very few counties did, in fact, meet their deadline. So while it's good to, you know, get that done, it's also, you know, you have challenges, obviously, trying to ascertain where it can be built, at what cost, et cetera. And again, you're not alone in that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone online that has any questions or comments?
No speakers.
Okay, thanks. I have a couple of questions. What kind of the discussion or thought from your colleagues, or even you, your fellow lobbyist, regarding the tour that the governor did? Kind of how are they assessing the tour?
You know, the tour just began, it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So we haven't had a lot of chatter amongst, the various lobbying entities and having had that conversation. You know, it's interesting, it's innovative. It's, if you recall, it's similar to what he would have done in his state of the state as he outlines his priorities. However, he's, he's engaging with the legislature, many members of both cities and counties were present at the various press conferences that he did do, the tours that he did do. They participated. So I think that they're attempting to deal with this, to come at this from a different perspective. So, using all the tools they have in their toolbox and how can we achieve success, particularly in a budget crisis. So it's a reallocation, you know, they're looking at Prop 63. They are hopeful that they can go back to the voters, increase that request for additional funds to go into Prop 63, and then do potentially a reallocation of those dollars. So it'll be interesting to see ultimately how that plays out, because as you know, counties have to have a certain amount within their savings to be able to determine what they can spend, how they can spend it, and making sure that they have enough cash on hand to be able to do that within that account. So if they start to talk about, you know, redistribution of funds, then I think it'll become a bigger conversation county involved. So, but I think he's just trying to figure out different ways to deal with the crises that we have that we're facing as a state.
Did you happen to read or follow the at-home press conference that CSAC hosted? What's kind of your assessment of that?
Yeah, you know, I think I think you did a wonderful job. So I think all of you guys did a wonderful job. I think it was very succinct. I think that it got a lot of great positive media coverage. I think that, you know, as you, I'm sure, are well aware, that it's a little frustrating to have fingers pointed when, in fact, as we've discussed many times over, there are proposals out there that could potentially, I don't want to say cure homelessness, but definitely get us on the right track. But it's just a matter of the funding and how do we make sure that the funding is appropriate. I think the reallocation of the HAP should be helpful because it makes sense to get into the hands of the individuals that are providing the services. I think that CSAC did a good job in saying that, you know, reminding everyone that counties do provide the services, the wraparounds, because you can put someone in a house, but at the end of the day, if they don't have the wraparound services, it's not going to be beneficial. So I thought that it was a good proposal. I think that CSAC, as well as, you know, all of you are doing a great job making sure you're messaging it correctly. People understand ultimately what the goal is.
Okay, thank you. Just kind of on the record a little bit. I participated on behalf of the county and over the last several weeks with respect to a number of the, road trip activities that the governor had. Participated directly with the at-home press conference that we held that was hosted by CSAC representing the Bay Area in that press conference. And also the county administrator as well as the healthcare agency director and myself were aware that there was going to be the press conference in San Diego on yesterday earlier than the press conference and are very closely looking to see how counties can be at the table to honestly look at how the proposals, the large-scale proposals that the governor laid out, will be rolled out going forward. How much of the Mental Health Service Act dollars are going to be redirected? How much of those redirections, even with respect to the, not just the upcoming 2024 statewide initiative spend more mental health monies on housing, but the $1 billion that the governor is redirecting away from existing Mental Health Service Act dollars to see how those are applied, as well as the full service programs that he referenced. I think he was pretty direct about his accountability part in his press conference, which I viewed as in real time as he was doing it on yesterday at 1 o'clock. The accountability is squarely focused at we the counties. I'm hoping that going forward on the homeless issue, the mental health issue, and the rehabilitation issue, that there's an honest table, a seat at the table for those discussions on a statewide basis, because they all directly affect the current structure that we have in place as county government. And as one small case in point, while it appears to be redirecting Healthcare Service Act dollars, Mental Health Service Act dollars for housing, for the most part, counties don't oversee planning, permitting, you know, within city structures. Getting clarity on that other than in the unincorporated areas is going to be something that everybody should be looking at, because otherwise it will further frustrate the end result, which is actual housing and beds for people who are mentally challenged, because we don't normally cite those alone. Appreciate the update. We do have a number of state actions required. AB 274, Brian, CalWORKs, CalFresh eligibility, income exclusions, recommendation from Andrea Ford, Social Service Agency, for support. AB 745, Brian, Reentry Housing and Workforce Development Programs, recommendation support also from Andrea Ford, Director, Social Service Agency. Fiscal year 23-24 state budget proposals to eliminate $50 million from public defense pilot program, recommendation oppose, coming from the public defender, Brian, Brendan Wood. So unless there's any question, Supervisor Tam.
Thank you, Supervisor Carson. I just have a clarification question on AB 745, and it's mainly for background. Currently, when there's a discharge plan for somebody that was released from Santa Rita, what kind of housing can we do we typically try to provide or direct them towards?
So I want to see if there's someone from social services that is present to respond to that. And while we're queuing them up, my understanding is that there's supposed to be a pre-plan and a warm handoff directly on the grounds of in Dublin at Santa Rita. And I know that there has been a trailer or so, of sorts that is, as people exit, the plethora of services that are supposed to be offered are there. Now, that's not to say that people have to go in there to get it on their way out, but try to have it in a fairly visible place. So I do see we have somebody's hands up from
Lynn.
Yes, Supervisor Carson, and to your question, Supervisor Tam, this is Lynn Peralta, Policy Director, Social Services Agency, I can obtain more information on that for you, Supervisor Tam, after the meeting. But I agree with Supervisor Carson that it is a warm handoff out of Santa Rita Jail. We work closely with HCD as well as HCSA in terms of post-release for folks who are going back into the community, and we have a number of service providers on both SSA and ACSA. And so I want to get that specific information as to who those contract providers are that do place into housing. But I know that there are referrals that go out, not just for housing, but also for the public benefits, signups to Medi-Cal, CalFresh, et cetera, post-release. Thank you.
I appreciate that. I was just trying to ascertain, and I'm obviously supportive of AB 745, just trying to see how much of a problem we're facing right now in the county, and are we at this situation where we have a crisis situation? I know we have a homeless crisis situation, but particularly for those that were formerly incarcerated. Thank you.
Sorry. Is there anyone else from want to speak to that issue? Because the other thing, I guess, and I don't serve on the Public Protection Committee, but information that we constantly get in our office, because we have historically done a lot of work with the reentry community and continue to do so, is that is a real area of concern, housing, when people are disconnected from the prison system, be it the local county and or the state prison system. Many times there's prohibitions around moving into public housing because of the housing laws with respect to the housing authorities in terms of people who may have records, which is on a legal block. The other is a disconnect. Even if you were in for a short time with family or friends, in terms of having someplace that is reasonably short and or long term for housing. A lot of studies have proven that the recidivism is a result of not having the consistent place that you can operate from as your home or residency.
I appreciate that. So on item three, the question I had was more, how much does the Public Defender's Office get now for PTPP funding? It's $30 million for the whole state and the program.
Do we have somebody from the Public Defender's Office online? Okay, why don't we, and it's reasonable, why don't we hold up until we get that information? I think it's pretty basic. Yeah, no, item three, correct. Any other comment and or question from regarding today's agenda? Any public comment?
Laura?
Yeah.
Hi, Supervisor Carson, Supervisor Tam. It's, excuse me, Laura Loy with the County Administrator's Office. Regarding item number three, which is from the Public Defender's Office, I assisted Brendan with completing the power request form. I'm wondering if the follow-up information that you need, do you want to bring it back to the next PAL meeting, or can I provide that to you offline and move this item forward? How would you like to proceed?
We'll bring it back to the next PAL meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the reason I have no idea whether or not someone from the general public, since this is a Brown Act meeting, might have a comment.
Thank you.
Okay. Any comment or question from the general public on anything which is not on today's agenda?
No speakers for public comment.
Okay, then why don't we go, if for anyone who wants to identify themselves who's not in the room today, can identify themselves representing their department or not.
Good afternoon. This is Honor Askeza, First 5, Alameda County.
Good afternoon. Rebecca Wegley from the Alameda County Probation Department.
No additional speakers.
That's it? Okay, thank you. I want to thank the clerk of the board's office, and I want to thank those who attended today's meeting. We're adjourned until next week. Thank you.
Thank you.